Well, let me first like to express my gratitude to the four organizers, especially Srini. I think he did a lot of work, and also to ITP for sponsoring this workshop. I think over the last few years that there are Princeton Institute for Advanced Studies and Paris EHS and Newton's Institute at Cambridge, now ITP, successively organize the workshops and drive the attention from physics community to turbulence studies. We're still debating on what problems of turbulence. So, and have thought a lot about what I have learned during the past few days. As you notice that this is a dynamical process, I have changed my title. I'd like to talk about a few problems which I hope to be able to get an answer in a reasonable time frame, and also to be able to think about the our community as need to deliver a message to the physics community at large to see what we have all learned and what we have learned and what we can say more about what we they have taught us. The two problems I am asking now is, are scaling exponents universal? And second is, are there universal scalings? Now, they may be the same answer, but maybe have different answers. And now, some of you may know that I now, while teaching still at UCLA, but also direct a lab, the state key laboratory for turbulence research, one of the, have a state key laboratory, so it's a unit devoted only to turbulence research in China. And so there's a very large now pool of talented, very talented undergraduate and graduate students from Peking University, a very high reputation there. And now I'm forced to think about these problems because I cannot assume the responsibility to lead these talented students into the an endless debates. And we have to have some hope. Well, so what I have tried to say is this. We have learned a lot from physics community. Of course, we have delivered some too. Have participated in this dynamical process of renovation of concepts from chaos, strange attractors, fractals, multifractals, patterns, spatial-temporal chaos, self-organized criticality. All these complex concepts have evolved from the 70s to 80s to 90s. And maybe at some point, we can add a few more, which is that each time turbulence has been a strong motivation to go forward. For example, from the fractal to multifractal. For example, from the chaos to spatial-temporal chaos. Turbulence has been a very strong driving force behind that. And now, I think at least we have some understanding that turbulence does involve multi-scale fluctuations, which I want to emphasize is now maybe also multi-magnitude fluctuations, meaning that the high amplitude fluctuations behave differently from low amplitude fluctuations. Now, this doesn't always drive attention from other people. Now, if the turbulence does have those multi-amplitude and multi-scale, is there any new symmetry which we talk about? And I like to propose the concept of hierarchical symmetry and also the concept of so-called most intermittent structures. And to answer, make the following statement if possible, that intermittency is a rule rather than an exception. And the multi-scale, multi-magnitude fluctuations are generally intermittent and contain orders and disorders. Nobody actually disagrees much about it. And turbulence, fully developed turbulence, packs this order and disorder in a very nice way. And I try to make this statement as more precise as possible. Now, the key here is the anomalous scaling. Now, I think we need a prediction beyond just the curve fitting, which that we need to develop the concept is a global understanding also a comprehensive story for the laws that governing the organization of turbulent fluctuations. So when the multi-scale developed, when multi-magnitude are there, which way they really organized. And those fluctuations are really spreading over many scales and really involving very intermittent high fluctuation events. And it has nonlinearity coupling in the scales. When these three ingredients are there, the system necessarily involves a high number of degree of freedom. And certain degree of organization is necessarily there. And we need to find out what. And what I call a really comprehensive or predictable theory for scaling, I mean that if we really have a complete understanding, then we have to talk about numbers. So I say numbers are numbers. And but also we need to be able to tell where the exponents are universal, where are not universal. Now, so since we are talking about the scaling exponents, and I like to first address the point of how to find the reliable exponents. Now, there has been this has been an issue that which attracted my attention very considerably recently. I like to talk about the PDF analysis to promote this idea to show the PDF. Since there we can have some idea about what convergence really means. And I like to illustrate that with the Beijing experiments that involve a large number of people now. The groups that in the State Key Laboratory for Turbulence Research, there are two professors and one assistant professor and postdoc and several graduate students. And experiments I like to describe involve particularly Professor Gu and Su and Zhu and Chen. And this is an experiment with three cylinder, but a square cylinder, arranged in this way and have wings blow at 20 meter, 25 meter per second. And we have props at various places downstream, from 3D, 5D, 8D, until 30D. The D is the dimension of the circle formed by the three cylinders. Now, this cylinder is particular in two aspects. One is they have sharp edges. So their shading structures could shade very singular structures, perhaps different, perhaps not, but different from the shaded structures from a cylinder, from a very round surface. And the second aspect is there are flows actually go through and there are flows go around. And it seems that we observe very distinct resonant structures, which I think is the cavity effect here. And that structures are seem to be very responsible for the generation of turbulence behind. We see the development of his subharmonics, his harmonics, not subharmonics, at high frequency and subsequently cascade and form a very long, pretty long, even in the spectral space, we have 1.5 decade of power law. And the Reynolds number is not very high. At 25 meters per second, you can, with that distance d of typically 10 centimeter, you can estimate the Reynolds number is about a million. It's a half a million about that. And Taylor microscope Reynolds number is much smaller. My estimated ones is about 300 to 400, 300 to 700. Okay, now this is a, now I would like to promote a standard for the data analysis. Now we want to construct the moments, but moments usually are computed by just the just time average addition of these signals, and this is very dangerous. Dangerous in the sense that there are okay. Let me show you first a typical piece of signal that we measured behind the grids. Now, I'd like to put it here so that I can constantly refer to it. So, construct the velocity difference PDF. Here is let me show you one PDF which is not done by us, but by Patrick Tevlin at the L'Economie Supérieure in Paris. Now this is the highest resolution, I call it resolution, PDF I have seen so far published, and they're spread for the most intermittent situation that spread from here is 10 minus 1 into here 10 minus 10, almost 10 minus 10, over almost 9 decades, okay? And now you recall that some of the other, usually we, of not very short sample, you stop right here. Now, nevertheless, that they have considerable trouble to have a converged exponent measured because of this event here. Now, what are these events? This tail event, this is a 1, this is 2, this is 3, this is 4, this is 5. It means that they have 100 millions of sample points, and these are only events for 5 points. Now, their statistical significance is very questionable. But because they are there, if you just do a time average, calculate moments, just do the sum divided by number of points, this effect of these points will be there. And we have checked very carefully their influence there. And not only they are there, the problem, the more serious, is that they have different effects at large scale from small scale. So they could have a very systematic errors. Here, let me show you the moments computed with and without those events. Without those events, these are the moments plotted against the third order moments. This is usually called ESS plot. Okay, and those triangles are what with those events, and field samples are without those events. Now this is fourth order, and this is tenth order. This is 15th. Huh? You just decide that below 5, you just does not have a significance. You cut it. No. You construct PDF first. You do the PDF, and then you truncate your PDF as right here, with this line. And the calculation use PDF is much more reliable in the sense that what we are talking about is what are the property of the statistical ensemble behind that. And you look at this plot, you see that this is a larger scale. A larger scale doesn't matter very much because the PDF fall very fast. The trouble is come from small scale. And you will have systematic errors. Longer the inertial range are, more trouble you will have. So that's why I say that Bob don't make any defensive argument for the Petrovsky analysis. At the very, yes. It's very relevant to ask this question, but let me make the point that here I understand that suppose I don't have those events here. Let's have that discussion a little bit later. The first point to make is that these are the very few events among 100 millions, okay? It's 5 among 100 millions. Their statistical significance is a question. I have more rigorous statistical argument to check their relevance. But the more point is that suppose we do not count it, okay? Then you have a very nice PDF stop here. And this PDF gives you the properties. This property is that the moments, one for the other, goes along the very nice power law property. Okay.
Yeah.
these are, again, let me stress that these are 5 points among 10 million points. Let me, here is the most difficult aspect, okay? But let me state my statement. Itamar, please. This is the most delicate issue. First, I want to make sure is that we have a very well-defined framework to study the sample size dependence. We do want to study the sample size dependence, okay? But we want to have a study of sample size dependence free of those accidents. There are experimental evidence. Everybody do the measurement. You will see that from time to time, the error jump. Okay, if you go through the data, you will see these points. There are few points among 10 million. Experimentally, you cannot guarantee that they are not accidents, okay? But right, sometimes you can make sure that they are not part of signal. Right. So let's say that I'm against to go the extrapolation in the tail. Why? Because that the evidence is this is to the figures that Harry Sweeney has shown the other day. Harry Sweeney, this is from data from Texas, and we have done this operation on different, take his time signal, take one-tenth of the time signal, and one-third of the signal, and four size signal available, which is 20 million. What you see is that as you increase the sample size, they definitely do not go as straight line. The straight line extrapolation is simply wrong. But after you remove this, now you remove this, you will still keep in mind, since could be sample size dependent, but we put ourselves in a proper framework now to study the sample size dependence without being annoyed by those accident events, which are not more than 5 out of 10 million. Actually, 10 million, now here is 20 million. Japanese data is much more than 20 million. It's around 200 million, okay, 200 million. So 200 million out of 5. This accident rate is definitely possible. So, no. Okay. The point is this, is that we need to construct PDF. We need to show to people PDF that how many decades you have and what kind of noise you have at the tail.
Why
okay.
Do you think it is
well, it could be genius, fine, but the behavior you observe here with this behavior of high order moments with zig like this, you calling that to be physically significant, that is arguable. That is arguable. Yes. This are the fifth order moment. Fifth, and this is the tenth order moment. This is 15th order moment. Okay? And the open simple is include every point there in this graph, and they make a lot of difference, especially at small scales. But if you open triangles are with those noises, okay, then let's compute the moments here. So we with this cutoff here. Remove 5 data points, okay? 5 points out of 20 million. But then you see the log of moments versus log of others go very nice. There are nice numbers here. And those numbers, then next step will be let's systematically now study the sample size dependence. Let's gradually increase this to see how our results depend on this. Now, I'd like to show you the result of the result in the Beijing experiments. So in Beijing experiments, here is the PDF, okay? And you see there's a little stuff here, out of here also. They are very physical. They are physical because the signal has is intermittent, but sometimes it's not intermittent. It's not turbulent because of entrainment, that there are smooth regions there, okay? But they are not very significant for the calculation of the high order moments. So we have certain rate here, and we have studied, analyzed the data at every point I mentioned to you. And next question is, we have to define where the scaling exponents are. Now, what I exercise is, I'm sorry, why is it ugly? Okay, they're arranged with, we decided here, is by globally minimizing the range for all p's we interest. This up to 12, we have measured up to 12, okay? And you see here, the point starts deviating from a straight line here, and this also deviated from a straight line. And there exists an algorithm that you can globally minimize the errors of linear square fitting over the entire range of p, over the entire range of p. If you do this, the numbers are, here is what we see. And here is the sample size dependence. What I plot use is for 30D, 9 minutes data, 30 minutes data, 45, and 90 minutes data. Okay, that gives you sample size dependence here. And the number sitting is here. For undersampling, it looks more up, but more sampling, 30 data is come down, and then gradually converge into this field circle. Field, not circle, but it is simple here. Now, the 30D data, so the within the our range of our uncertainty, the convergence uncertainty, that this sample departure will be the typical, what we can say, the uncertainty about the exponent. Because their convergence are very continuous monotone. They're not just jump widely, except at the very beginning from up to down, and then just continue to converge to here. And on the contrary, we did the same thing at the 5D, at the 60 minutes data, that you see is here, is much lower than here. Now, the same analysis. Now, what I want to do is this, what I propose is this. Once we have the convergence, they are not completely converged yet, because the number slightly changed. But what when we want to compare the exponents at different Reynolds number, what I propose, which I tested in this, is that we take the same sample length, which means that everybody have to be in the same 60 minutes. I have all 60 minutes data for everybody, and also we have the same criterion for defining scaling exponent, and everything is the same, and this comparison will give us much more reliable data. And here it is what finally gave. 3D, 5D, 8D group is right, is down here. And then go to 18D, 22, 26 is just monotonically increased. It's from triangle to square up to circle. Now this line, solid line, is the formula that I have given with Levesque in 1994. And so now the conclusion, yes.
As you go downstream after the cylinder like object you have, the length scale, the larger scale, will grow probably like the square root of the distance.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping 60 minutes as an absolute number makes no sense whatever.
Well, no. Okay. Let's not go either way to say that first. Does not make sense because you have no evidence what does mean by doesn't make sense. What I mean is that I look at convergence here. I compare my 30 minutes data with my 60 minutes data. I don't see the change in the scaling exponents. You might see there are changes in other things. However, given the range of the scale, the moment that change in this scale does not change the number anymore. This is what I'm talking about. Now, turbulence is, now here is something philosophically I like to maybe say one sentence. Turbulence is really wild. Wild in the sense that things may not converge in one aspect, but other things may all have already converged. You have to specifically test the function you consider to see that these are converged. I'm talking about numbers which are converged in that sense. Okay, this is mathematically a very well defined thing. All the operations are very well defined, and all the numbers are defined. Yes, it could. Fine. It's his right, but it does not contradict the significance of the number here. Period. It does not contradict anything here. And so, what I want to make the conclusion is time passed. When do we start? We start 5 minutes late. Okay. But anyway, finally, this the following the point here that when we compute a scaling exponent, I think the most important thing is to see that we want to study the convergence. And I would like to emphasize that there's no easy statistical argument to assess the error bars. People put the error bar there. It's really not meaningful. Based on, it's not just least square fit that there's some any error bar for any fixed thing that it's very difficult to assess because the data are correlated, they are not uncorrelated samples, and the scaling range is not predetermined, et cetera, et cetera. There are many, many other problems. But I think convergence as number of sample size goes, that gives a reasonable way to assess that whether the number we talk about really has converged or not. So the output is, so I put the recommendation here, is that we have to keep the same p, the velocity difference statistics. The PVL is essentially the lowest probability at the cutoff. And let's push this number as down as possible. 10 minus 7, 10 minus 8, 10 minus 9, in order to properly speak about whether the things are converged. And I figure that has to be at least less than 5 in order to talk about the moment of order 6. And not every statistics has that requirement. So let me just briefly to say my result of experiments that scaling exponents are not universal. Intermittency effects actually actively evolve when fluids move downstream. Okay. Now, structures might develop in a very complicated manner, but it actually evolves, and the degree of intermittency is changing. But all this are all well explained by this model. This is which I did not emphasize here. Let me re-show the figure here again. All this, what are these dashed lines? Those dashed lines are all the formula, but with measured beta and gamma. The beta and gamma is what the Harry has talked about, which called beta test and gamma test earlier. But the matter of the fact is that they all described by this formula with gamma p and 1 minus is two parameter beta and gamma. And finally, as d goes infinity, this is a conjecture here, that beta p seem to approach this one. Now, d, what is d? Oh, the d is my, d is distance, x, you know, x. D is my diameter, but the x has go downstream, far away from the thing. It seem to converge. But what are the beta and gamma? So this is the hierarchical symmetry. What I like to talk about, and now hopefully that we will like. I call this as a I call the beta symmetry. And this structure, most intermittent structure, I call the gamma structure to simplify the notation. Now, in 1994, so we tried to incorporate those less ordered, less intensive structure together with taking into account the fact that turbulent structure might be filamentary at very high order. And so we come up with this assumption that study the ratio of the two moments, and that, properly speaking, has dimension of the velocity itself, and as p increases, actually this increases the attached to the most intensive fluctuations, And there are symmetry between most intensive and slightly less intensive one, with this recursive symmetry here. And this makes it dimensionally correct. And there have to be something coming in with called F infinity, that is called most intermittent structure here. And if you divide this by F2, you find that this, if you plot log versus this log, and they might have a straight line, and that straight line will slope beta. So if this straight line is valid, then we have so-called the data passed the gamma test, passed the beta test. All right, so the here is just a one plot of the data points that for the Beijing experiments, and at two different minutes, this is 66 minutes data, and this is 60 minutes data, which has all 10. And you see that the fact that the straight line does not change drastically from 6 minutes to 60 minutes for both, even for the very small sample size, that is very straight, and also that doesn't change very much from 0.82 to 0.84. So that number obviously has converged. Now further with so-called gamma test is that the gamma test is if this is true, the most intermediate structure does scale with length scale with certain gamma, this is for the characteristic exponent. Here we're talking about a relative scaling exponent, so actually it's really scale with the third order moment of power gamma. If that's true, then the scaling exponent is described by this formula, and that resolves into theta p minus this one. Now, this test is not independent test from the scaling exponent. It is a property of the scaling exponent. So, but from the limited range of scaling exponent, we usually restrict up to below 12, where with scaling exponents are believed to be accurate. If this straight line is true, then we say that the flow passed the gamma test. And now the flow does pass the gamma test to some extent. You still see a little bit of oscillation here, but globally it is a pretty good straight line, and the slope is 0.105. And however, you will see that this number could be different if it depend on what range you are talking about. Yes, they are. And the key is, if we want to compare systematically for different length scale or for different position, what we would like to do is to have the range is prefixed for every distance to make a systematic comparison. So far the beta and the gamma test has passed. A lot of people have contributed to this study. Has Turbin Weeks has earlier, Banzi and Els has done the work, and maybe a Stokes simulation, and Shi Chen and I, we have done the work, and a helium swirling flow of Patrick, we have recently done the work, and Great Turbulence have done the work. Jeff, recently we have also done the work at Beijing and also with the Italian group, and Taylor Quet flow that with Harry Sweeney that was reported Monday, and Shell model, Levesque and I, we have did the work. So a lot of systems that's passed this test. All right, so now I like to skip this. So what I come back into the questions I, the conclusion, so what we have learned actually here. So what we have learned, three things. One is gamma seems to depend on the turbulent environment. Let me show you that if I fix every parameters, just let the distance change. So this is what comes here. The gamma, this is the distance away from the cylinder, and beta seems to be more or less constant, and gamma actually does change from here to here. There are two groups. One group is over here, is the typical scaling exponent is very close to what the Patrick has measured in the Patrick's Pavlin's data. And what here is actually gradually approaching to something. And this line is 1 over 9, is what we predicted in 1994. So here, what we have learned is that gamma seems to depend on turbulent environment, and that is a major source of non-universality. Maybe also second point, that maybe there exists a universal set of scaling in a far field fully developed turbulence. Well, gamma is possibly generated by the internal cascade mechanisms, by the spontaneous cascade itself, by the structure which is very much affected by the wall. What I suspect is that very close to the wall, that the structure shaded from the cylinder and resonance from cylinder has a strong influence, and which will be the case in Harry Sweeney's experiments, as well as in the Patrick Tabrin's experiment, because they have the washer, and that structure will never get away from the wall. And so this mixture of the structure would have caused the trouble. So now I have to wrap up. So what I have done is this, is that the question number one, this is related to the first question here. So are scaling exponents universal? I think they are not universal. And scaling exponents actually reflect the local character of the dynamics and life temperature. So this might be an order parameter, interesting order parameter here. And Navier-Stokes space theory must incorporate such features. An important modification to the K41, I think there's two which we it's more interesting. One is the complete self-similarity hypothesis could be replaced by hierarchical similarity hypothesis, which take into account the fact that high amplitude fluctuation, more intensive fluctuation, does have different behavior as the low intensity fluctuation. But the way that the low intensity fluctuation is related to the high intensity fluctuation, and that has an invariant symmetry. And that's what beta symmetry is talking about. If beta is equal to 1, then there is that the model actually goes back to Kolmogorov, and which means that there's no difference between the low order, low amplitude and high amplitude fluctuations. But beta equal to 0 is the another interesting limiting case where it is Burgers situation, Burgers turbulence, or is in the beta model, which in the Frisch Nelken Sulam beta model situation. Well, there's only one black and white. There's only a black and white. Only one white. This is the ultimate one. Also, I'd like to mention very very quickly that what we have done here is not a traditional statistical thing anymore. Traditionally, we go from mean to RMS to third order moment, fourth order moment, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we were going from the infinite moment at first phase, which talk about those gamma structures. And, of course, gamma could depend on sample size. But I want to emphasize that for given sample size, whatever gamma you detect is something already interesting. Then you can study the sample size dependence to see how the gamma converges as a sample size dependence. Everything is well defined mathematically here. Okay, and this might hold the key to the closure problem of turbulence. It might hold the key. So I think the time is very short. Let me just go... to the conclusion. Go to the conclusion that. I think what we are looking for here is two things. One is the laws governing the organization of the structures, but secondly is apply the laws to help in solving problems in engineering and other scientific problems. Now, I think we may not mix the two, but it's important to keep in mind that the law, whether it's useful or not, is in fact a criterion to say that whether we do have a key to the problem. This, I think the hierarchical symmetry, although I still don't know how to apply it, but I'm actively studying how to apply that to the engineering problem, is interesting universal behavior that needs to be studied further. And I'd like to just mention that, you know, multi-scale, non-linearity, mixture of order and disorder, these are not the unique feature to turbulence. They are features to many other problems. And so we have a lot to say to others beyond arguing among ourselves. So we should, I think let's develop our reasoning. And I think here is the, here, not, I don't want to talk about this example anymore. And finally, that very quickly, that I think the three critical issues which I take my attention is one is very get very precise and reliable measurements and also post analysis of the exponents. And then we need to set up the standard and go with the same standard for all data sets. Let's just do one thing, for one standard for everything. We can still argue to change the standard, okay, but let's apply the same standard to every data set. And so I have one major suggestion. I don't know if ITV can do it, but any other agency can do it, is that let's have a common website that have all the turbulence data set in there. It's public domain and everybody can take it and analyze it. And so we don't have to really argue as far as the sample size convergence is concerned, okay? And secondly, we need to get the number precise. So I said earlier that numbers are numbers. I want to add one more comment on this.
Make it quick.
Good numbers are more than numbers. Okay. Thank you.
I'd like to exercise my prerogative as chair. I'm far less concerned about cutting off PDFs than I am about the process. If you want to calculate the 15th moment, then you should be plotting something like C to the 15th PSC and C. And your data had better convince you that what goes beyond the limits of your resolution is not significant. Unfortunately, I don't see that very often. There are lots of reasons to stop here. The first being the limits of your A to D converter. But there are lots of reasons to throw data away. Any good experimentalist first goes through and does a bin analysis on his A to D converter to make sure you're not putting things in adjacent bins when you shouldn't be. The second thing you should probably do, given that you're trying to look at velocity differences, you ought to do a slewing rate analysis. You know very well what the slewing rate of your anemometer is. You can get that from the manufacturer's quote. And you can quickly run through your data and see whether the change has exceeded the slewing rate of the anemometer. If it has, that's either noise or there's something wrong with your A to D again. And you ought to throw those data points out. But I really worry a little bit when I see people giving moments. I mean, you can show wonderful PDFs, but the real question is, what effect does what's going on out here have on your moments? Classical way, you say, well, I'll finish it with an exponential tail. If it makes more than 5% difference, I'll try a log normal tail or some other tail, a wide Weibull distribution. And if I'm getting anything more like 5 or 10%, I throw the whole experiment away. Now, that's my comment.
Well, let me exercise the power of the author too.
There's maybe a reason for that. Yeah.
Let me have a chance to respond to that point.
And I didn't mean as a criticism.
No, it is a very good comment. And in fact, if I plotted the 15th of this, you will look like something like this. Okay, actually, come down because of cutoff. No, question is the moment. The convergence of moment is still different from convergence of exponent.
Yeah.
Because what I checked is the convergence of the exponent.
Right.
There are different thermodynamic functions.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing, which I do things in a self-consistent way. But I definitely agree that, so let this extend further, and not only the moment at one distance, but the moment at every distance,
yeah.
Okay? And the exponent has converged to some extent. Okay.
I don't understand the concept of converged exponents when the moments are not converged.
Well, because simply that's very simple. That moments go like this, okay? And every moment will go like this. The straight line is the slope does not change. It takes some time to think about it.
I'm with you. I can understand why the probability would converge in the moment wouldn't. But
take time to think about it. That's not the... Could be. Well, now.
The idea is not to check whether the DC functions have converged off today, but that's all that it is. We have a flow behind the system. It's not very large for the system that has more N isotopic flow in.
Yes.
Then we get higher solution of N isotopic spectrum, not more in the system function, the picture, the number of N points.
Could be.
Well,
I'm sure you have a theory to tell me this. Very strong. Well, thank you. Thank you for the comments. Thank you for the lesson. And let me just have time. So it's all correct what you say, but the problem is that you are also exaggerating here, in the sense that you have to predict your numbers before you talk about anisotropic effects. Okay, this is a one-dimensional data points, and I measure this multi-frequency fluctuations, and that scaling exponent. I'm saying this scaling exponent is not universal. All right. So again, numbers are numbers. So, it's up to the theoretician. But it is.
This is one thing. The second one I would like to propose as a theme for tomorrow's discussion, the physical content of scaling exponents generally, because I personally don't know what it is. I would be very happy to hear something reasonable to explain what it is. That's for tomorrow.
No,
there's the rectangle of God.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
It seems like a really violent exercise.
Yes, it is. It is. That's right. We pretend, try to. Because I want to check this thing, is that I want to create an anisotropic structure and to see, do we see the scaling range? It seems that we observe the scaling range right after the cylinder. But that, as far as the downstream goes, actually seem to disappear. So we particularly want to check. Yes, it takes a long 30D that have not fully converged yet.
Okay, I'm going to have to cut it off. Let's go to our last speaker. Sorry, we really stirred something.